I'm Melissa Harris-Perry, and this is The Takeaway. Good to have you with us. This week began with Labor Day, but in a wicked contradiction, Monday was also the day that 7.5 million workers lost their COVID-era expanded federal unemployment benefits. President Joe Biden declined to extend the benefits before they expired. And to be clear, we are still very much in the COVID era. Washington lawmakers have been battling over these benefits since the earliest days of the pandemic. Democrats initially argued that the unprecedented economic crisis precipitated by the pandemic required a more robust economic safety net. And most of those Democrats championed the expanded benefits from the outset. But as the pandemic moved into its second year, Republicans and some Democrats have sought to terminate those benefits, claiming that the additional resources were deterring Americans from returning to work or seeking new jobs. Indeed, several Republican-led states ended the expanded benefits early, in some cases, months before the Labor Day expiration. Here's Texas Governor Greg Abbott on CNBC back in May.
We have the demand for the workforce where people can get back to work. The numbers are safe enough in our state for people to get back to work. It is time for America to get back to work.
And here's Arkansas Governor Asa Hutchinson speaking on Fox News in June.
It immediately sent a signal to workers out there that you need to return to work. If you need training, we can provide training to you. If you need childcare assistance, we're going to have that assistance available to you.
But lately, it seems the battle's over. A bipartisan consensus has emerged, and a majority of lawmakers from both parties seem pretty disinterested in maintaining these expanded unemployment benefits. In fact, their expiration this week was met with silence across the partisan divide. Here's Labor Secretary Marty Walsh on the Today Show this past Monday, discussing how the Biden administration is now passing the buck to the states.
Today was the day that the $300 extension will end. We have allowed governors, if they need to look at using rescue plan money to extend the unemployment benefit in their state if they need to.
So where does this leave the millions of Americans who relied on these benefits? For more on this, I spoke with Heather Long, economics correspondent for The Washington Post, and Annalise Goger, fellows at Brookings Metro at the Brookings Institution. And I started by asking Annalise to clarify the specific unemployment benefits that ended.
In normal times, we have a largely state-run unemployment system, and what many people call regular unemployment insurance. But during the pandemic, the Congress had to step in because most of the workers impacted by the pandemic were not eligible for that regular unemployment insurance for various reasons. And so they had to create actually three whole new programs in the middle of the crisis. And it's those emergency programs that expired on Labor Day. And so that includes one program to cover workers like gig workers, self-employed, people who normally would categorically not qualify, including people who were part-time or didn't earn enough. And then another category was extended benefits. So if you're a long-term unemployed due to the economy, then they were offering extended benefits up to 53 weeks. And normally it ends at 26 in most states. And then the third is the unemployment supplement, which was the most controversial, which initially was around $600 and has more recently been reduced to around $300. So as of Labor Day, all three of those things go away. So what the only thing left is the regular state unemployment insurance, which actually covers a pretty small share of people's previous income, although it varies from state to state. It can be low as you know, just around $100 to $200 a week, and then to a high of around $400 or $500 a week. So that's very concerning because these emergency programs did a lot to address a lot of the structural inequities and outdated nature of the safety net.
Heather, maybe you can pick up there where Annalise just left off about sort of what these benefits did. You know, obviously they were in place for long enough for us to have at least some understanding of what their impact was.
Well, there was a huge impact, and we just saw some new data come out in the last few days that shows us that a big reason that hunger did not spike as high as everyone was really concerned about during 2020, during the worst of the crisis, is because of the government stepping in and giving more generous unemployment aid and those three stimulus checks that went out. So, you know, it literally was keeping people's lights on and keeping people fed during this crisis. And it's also interesting, we had a little bit of a test case this summer. 22 states, led mainly by Republican governors, did do away early with those benefits. So they essentially did what happened nationwide on Labor Day in June or July. And the early evidence from those states that rolled back early is pretty telling. There was no big increase in those states in employment. So these arguments that these more generous unemployment benefits were keeping people from returning to jobs does not seem to be the case, at least right away. But at the same time, some data indicates that hunger rose in those states as unemployment benefits went away and hardship paying bills went up again. And interestingly, a lot of those state economies had a little bit of a ding because that money obviously is so critically needed right now. And people spend it right away. They spend it on groceries. They spend it on rent. They spend it on fixing their car. And so when all of that money suddenly ends overnight, we expect to see a little bit of a hit on the economy.
It's such an interesting point, right, that in an economy that is struggling in the ways that ours has in the context of the pandemic, that giving consumers money to consume their, you know, their basic needs also stimulates the economy. Annalise, I'm wondering if you can dig in a little bit here where on this assumption that Heather was, you know, naming for us, that that we've heard repeated a lot in recent months, that the reason that there are so many job openings, that there's kind of a tight labor market, is because of these overly generous unemployment benefits that are keeping people from going back to work.
Right. And this, you know, frankly, is an old trope where you're blaming the lazy worker for the state of the economy. And it's really clear to me that if you look at all the evidence, there have been several studies so far. And although there are small micro-level changes, like in the states that took those away early, out of 9 workers, 1 may have been employed by the end of the month. The other 8 would still be unemployed. And so I think partly what's going on here is that, you know, first of all, the pandemic is at a much greater scale of unemployment than previous recessions. And so on Labor Day, around 7.5 million workers were estimated to have lost benefits. And in previous recessions, it was in the range of 1 to 2 million. Another issue, though, is clearly that the pandemic is creating all kinds of complexities for people in their decisions about where to go to work and how to navigate this economy, because their lives are more unstable. They may have children at home and not have childcare. They may have health issues or a family member who has health issues. And so I just think that most workers are thinking about a much wider range of things than maybe they used to pre-pandemic. For example, if a job doesn't have health insurance or sick leave, that could be a much bigger deal right now for a worker. And so the scale combined with the complexity makes this entire labor market extremely tumultuous, and it can take a really long time, even in a normal economy, for someone to find another job, and also for an employer to find a good candidate for a job. And so we see a lot of churn and uncertainty. I would be really hesitant to just say, well, it's workers that are being lazy, because there's really not much evidence that that's true. And there's a lot more evidence that, as Heather was saying earlier, that these benefits actually kept the economy afloat. So I think we need to start thinking about what would have been the cost if we had allowed the economy to tank and allowed all those impacts to happen, both at the individual or family level, but even at the society level, of just the sort of downward spiral that can happen when you don't use economic stabilizers like unemployment insurance.
We're coming back around in some ways, not only to the individual household, but also to the effect on the economy writ large. Can you just kind of, you know, help give us a little bit of a temperature check? Where is the economy right now? What does job creation look like? And maybe also kind of, as Annalise was hinting at here, not only jobs, but jobs of a particular kind, right? Those that might have things like sick leave and health insurance.
it's such a confusing time for the economy. On the one hand, if you look at the normal metrics that we like to, economists like to look at, things look pretty good. You know, we're having some of the strongest economic growth that we've had since the early 1980s. The economy has a record number of job openings. We just got data this week that showed nearly 11 million job openings in July, something we've just never seen before. So when you look at that, you think, oh, this economy is humming. Things have really bounced back. About 75% of the jobs lost during the pandemic have come back. But on the flip side, you also see that this is an economy that still has 8.4 million unemployed Americans, which is a really high number. And when you dig into who those people are, you see that still there's a very high struggle to get jobs back for particularly Black women and Hispanic women and Americans who do not have college degrees. So this is an economy that looks like it's firing, but it's not working for everyone. And I will point out that the most read article on the Washington Post over the Labor Day weekend was actually a piece with the headline of why America has 8.4 million unemployed people and over 10 million job openings. A couple of points, some of which Annalise was just making about why this is happening. Why can't those unemployed people just take, you know, these jobs? I would point out three quick things. Number one, there's obviously a pandemic still going on. Number two is this mismatch. I explain it to people like this. Yes, there's a ton of job openings, but they are not necessarily in the locations or the industries where the unemployed are. You know, we've seen this boom in suburbs lately, particularly wealthy suburbs that people sort of flock to during the pandemic. And if you go to the malls in those areas, it looks like there is no pandemic right now. You know, but that's not where a lot of workers, particularly struggling workers, live near those places. And there's not usually good public transit to get there. The final one is about 40% of the unemployed, so over 3 million of the unemployed, have been unemployed for more than 6 months, what we call long-term unemployed. And we know from history that it's hard for people who have those kind of gaps on their resume, even though most people understand it's because of the pandemic, it's hard for those people to find a job right away. I had written about a warehouse worker with forklift driver certification, one of those licenses everybody thinks is so in demand right now. And it took him months to find a new job, even with a qualification like that. And there was a really interesting Harvard Business School study that just came out in the last few days that found that a lot of big companies are using robots or using artificial intelligence that sounds so sophisticated to scan all these resumes. But what's happening is they're actually excluding a lot of people, particularly people who haven't been working in the last few months, or I hate to say it, women who maybe took time off, moms or dads, to be home with kids. So anytime there's a gap on a resume, a lot of those robots are kicking those resumes out. So unemployed people are not able to get hired.
You know, I think that that sort of insight about, you know, you can't just match workers to jobs. It's not, you know, it's not just a puzzle where you can move the pieces wherever you want. Annalise, maybe you can also pick up on this question, particularly of women who are unemployed. I'll never forget the headline at one point in a jobs report during the pandemic that every single job that had been lost during that period was lost by a woman worker. Is this going to potentially be a long-term situation for women who may find it difficult to ever return to the workforce on the back end of the pandemic, if we could ever get to the back end of the pandemic?
The problem is that when you lose a job, oftentimes it's very destabilizing and in some cases even traumatizing, and it can affect someone's self-confidence and, you know, basically add stress in several domains of their life. And so this is a really difficult moment to navigate for a lot of job seekers. And when you're a woman in this pandemic economy with young children, for example, the childcare responsibilities or family care responsibilities, it only adds to the situation because right now, for example, with the Delta variant, you know, who knows if schools are going to close again, if there's an outbreak, and it's really difficult. you know, one thing to keep in mind is that the U.S. spends about a fifth of other industrialized countries on career services and what's called worker readjustment programs. So this is, you know, the ability to go into a job center and get some career counseling and some help saying, hey, I lost my job in the restaurant industry. I can't be exposing myself, you know, to those risks. Can you help me transition to an office job or to something where I'm not interacting with people because I have diabetes or whatever? We don't make those services free and widely available. You have to qualify for that one-on-one, more intensive service. And I think, you know, there's a lot of evidence from many evaluations that those types of services are actually the most effective services we have in the workforce system. You know, where we don't see a lot of effectiveness is short-term trainings, like the certificates you mentioned. You know, many people think of our workforce system and policy as just a training thing. And what I like to tell people is, you know, for a lot of people, the inequality comes in terms of access to information. You know, what jobs are even out there for me that would be good given my interests, my skills, my experience? How can I translate if there's a lot of jobs in construction and infrastructure coming up with the new funding, assuming that goes through? Like, why would we just assume that women from, you know, a hotel job might automatically fit in a construction job? You know, we have to find other occupations that would make sense for people. And there may be some women that want to go into construction. How can we support them in a very male-dominated space and make sure that they feel welcome and have access to what they need if they need to deal with unstable schedules and things like that? Making a career transition is happening more and more in the economy, but we have been decreasing funding for all the kinds of support that people need to get a job or make a career transition. And that's very concerning given disruptions like COVID. But even before that, I hope moving forward, we think more about how to really support people to get a job, because that should be the goal and it should be bipartisan.
Heather, let's talk about that. What should be bipartisan, in the sense that one of the ways that even these federal unemployment benefits came into being was the pressure caused by the initial outbreak of the pandemic. But there seems to be a bit of kind of pandemic fatigue at this point, even as we look at you know, 1,500 deaths a day, where we're looking at, you know, Florida with one of the country's worst Delta outbreaks, reporting more deaths now a day than at any other point. You know, states like Tennessee and South Carolina, you know, leading the country in cases per capita. Like, it's not just that we're still kind of in the pandemic. Like, the pandemic is still raging. Is there any kind of appetite, given that, to try to extend this kind of support that Annalise was talking about?
There is no appetite. And I'll mention that that's a bipartisan statement there. It was kind of interesting. President Biden's team, when they were asked about unemployment insurance going away, sort of said, oh, well, the states have money from the stimulus package. If they want to use that to extend it, they can. So the classic, you know, point the finger at somebody else sort of mentality. And so, you know, there's you know, they haven't introduced bills to extend the unemployment insurance any further. And I think the key takeaway is what Annalise said at the top of our discussion, which is if we had a decent state unemployment system or what regular system outside of pandemic, it would be okay probably to take away or to phase out some of these additional benefits. But the fact that your Lyft or Uber driver can just be cut off overnight because they're a self-employed or a gig worker, as opposed to somebody who has the regular 9-to-5 job, that they would not get unemployment insurance. You know, that's where the U.S. safety net just has these gaping holes right now. The other thing I would point out that I think is kind of interesting to watch right now with all of this is, to me, the key stat to watch in terms of is this economy fully recovered or pretty far along is, what's happening with child care centers. You know, right? It's interesting. If you look at the data in both July and August, child care employment went down. Workers are quitting. They're tired. They're burned out from this pandemic. These are really low paid jobs, unfortunately, in many cases. And sometimes they don't even get health care benefits if they're working, taking care of children. And so at the moment, we are more than 10% down still in employment in the child care sector. Many child care centers are worried that they might have to close, and many have already closed their infant rooms or their toddler rooms because, of course, those require more staff. You have to have at least one staff or teacher per every four babies. And if there's not enough teachers, that's the first room you close. And so to me, you can see it that particularly moms, this is one of the key reasons why moms have struggled to get back into jobs right now. And it's really hampering the entire U.S. economy and is a real, flashing crisis, red light warning sign about we are not back.
Heather Long is an economics correspondent for The Washington Post, and Annalise Goger is a fellow at Brookings Metro at the Brookings Institution. Thank you both for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me.